I've had more dangerous encounters at gas station counters in the Walmart parking lot. But the smaller the man, the quicker the plan goes to somebody's getting shot. Kevlar and jeans, a mask and a gun, and a badge for everyone in the mob. You probably don't need to shoot someone in the face to do the thing that you're calling a job. How's work? Well, they got a shooting women now. How's the pay? Well, there's a bonus if you're wanting men. How's the hours? We shoot them in the daylight, and then we steal them away in the dark of the night. Only the best and the brightest, only the finest get to put on the sacred mask. If you ever been fired, congrats, you're hired for this particular task. Now they'll circle the wagons, drape the man in the flag, and say don't trust what your eyes can see. They'll say it's her fault instead for getting shot in the head when we all saw the same damn thing.
Yes, we did. We all saw the same damn thing.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Elsewhere in the Golden State, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, and Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for your listening convenience on the internets. On the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. As we go to air, just within the past hour or less, Democratic U.S. Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona has announced he is suing Secretary of Defense, he calls himself Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, hoping to block attempts to downgrade his retirement rank and slash his pension, pushing back because Senator Mark Kelly had the temerity to remind his fellow troops that they do not, in fact, they must not follow unlawful orders. As well, Minnesota and the Twin Cities are now suing the federal government to stop what they describe as an immigration crackdown. What they describe, in fact, as a federal invasion of Minnesota and the Twin Cities. Lots to get to today. As you heard at the top of the show, that was the great young folk singer Jesse Wells, who we featured on this program a number of times in recent months, singing in response to what we have all been watching and witnessing and talking about in horror, frankly, over the past 5 days or so. Since the shooting of 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good in Minneapolis by armed federal immigration official Jonathan Ross, as Good, the young mother, an American citizen, tried to maneuver her vehicle away from several supposed federal immigration law enforcement officials last week and what senior U.S. officials from the president to the vice president to the chief of Homeland Security all lied about as a so-called domestic terrorist incident. It wasn't. Though we will speak with someone momentarily about what we all saw from different angles on videotape since last week. I also hope to get to some of your calls on the incident a bit later this hour at 818-985-5735. If you'd like to ring in on any particular side of this matter on what you saw in those videotapes, 818-985-KPFK is our number if you'd like to line up now. But rather than admit error, the administration has attempted instead to bar local state officials from investigating the matter and has announced plans to double down on their ongoing federal assault, federal invasion, as the state called it, against Minnesota over the weekend. The state, headed up by Governor Tim Walz, who ran as the vice presidential candidate against Donald Trump in the 2024 election. Hundreds more federal officers are now set to be deployed to Minnesota this week. That, according to Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, speaking on Sunday, amid nationwide outcry and protests against Rene Good, was shot dead during the operation in Minneapolis last week as part of a surge at the time of some 2,000 federal agents. More than three times the number of officers in the Minneapolis Police Department that were already deployed to the state. The killing of Good by the ICE official has been strongly condemned by members of Congress, mostly on the Democratic side, unfortunately, by local leaders and residents, intensifying scrutiny on federal government operations in the state and elsewhere across the nation, where citizens and non-citizens alike have become victims of Donald Trump's crackdown on supposed criminal migrants, even as the vast majority of those detained, citizens and non-citizens alike, have never faced any sort of criminal charges, much less convictions. But Secretary Noem was clear in her remarks to Fox News over the weekend that the additional surge of forces against the residents of Minnesota is now focused not just on finding immigration law breaches, but on tackling anti-ICE protesters. Quote, "We're going to continue to, if they conduct violent activities against law enforcement, if they impede our operations, that's a crime," she said, "and we will hold them accountable to those consequences." Of course, Noem and Vice President Vance and President Trump have all mischaracterized the incident that took place last week, describing Good as a, quote, radical left domestic terrorist, with Trump falsely claiming that the ICE agent here, identified later as Jonathan Ross, had been run over, that Ms. Good, quote, viciously ran over the ICE officer, Trump tweeted, saying, "It is hard to believe that he is alive, but is now recovering in the hospital." He wasn't. All of that was a lie from the president of the United States. In fact, Jonathan Ross was walking around the crime scene for several minutes, appearing to be in perfect shape, after firing three times at Good at nearly point-blank range in the face. Eyewitness videos show Good in her SUV on a suburban neighborhood street in Minneapolis, talking to ICE officers, even waving them to pass her. From her car as her wife talks to officers outside the car. Footage recorded on a cell phone belonging to Ross the moment he fires multiple rounds into the car after it starts to move shows a little bit more about what happened. Politicians, pundits, and law enforcement officials from all over the country have been ringing in on this since the horrific shooting, just the latest at the time, in a series of such shootings by masked federal officials, including these remarks on Friday from Philadelphia's Sheriff Rochelle Bilal, who suggested that in Philadelphia, federal officials wearing masks might be arrested.
"No law enforcement professional wears a mask. None. None. Law enforcement professionals do not shoot at moving vehicles. I'm not saying fleeing because she wasn't fleeing. She was getting out of the way. Law enforcement professionals do not stand in front of moving vehicles invoking an action that is illegal. No, we don't. And so we stand here today with all those who stand against the made-up, fake, what you can call ICE professional law enforcement. I don't call them none of that. I call them made-up, fake, wannabe law enforcement. Because what they do is against not only legal law, but the moral law. So I'm with the DA, and we will work with them. If any of them want to come in this city and commit a crime, you will not be able to hide. Nobody will whisk you off. You don't want this smoke, because we will bring it to you. And the fake, whatever they call them, because I can't say the name, but the criminal in the White House would not be able to keep you from going to jail. Benay Good should be here today.
That's Sheriff Rochelle Bilal, Sheriff of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We'll be joined momentarily by another law enforcement official, professional, with thoughts on all of this. The shooting last Wednesday of Ms. Good was just the latest at the time in a number of confrontations around the country in which agents have fired on drivers that they alleged were using their vehicles as weapons. Jim Bierman, founder and president of the Future Policing Institute, told the LA Times, quote, "This doesn't surprise me, and until something changes dramatically, this probably, and I say this sadly, won't be the last tragic incident involving ICE and protesters." Well, Bierman was right, perhaps before he even knew that he was right at the time. Oregon officials are now launching their own investigation of a Thursday incident in Portland where Customs and Border Patrol officers shot a couple during a vehicle stop. No video has yet emerged of that incident. Since July, ICE, in fact, has fired into or at vehicles 13 times, leaving at least 8 people shot with 2 confirmed dead. That, according to the Wall Street Journal. We have seen one incident after another like that out here in Southern California, where federal agents shot after claiming that they were being attacked, only to see the charges dropped against those that they had stopped and shot, only after seeing those charges dropped when the evidence proved the opposite of what the federal officials had claimed, that they had been attacked, that they had been pinned by a vehicle, when video evidence ultimately showed the exact opposite. We saw the same thing in recent months in Chicago. The nonprofit outlet known as The Trace has been tracking all of the people that have been shot by ICE in recent months, which now numbers at least 40, including someone celebrating New Year's Eve by shooting his gun into the air. He was killed by an off-duty ICE official. Sadly, as The Trace reported last week, it's not just incidents like the one that we all saw with our own eyes last week in Minneapolis. Behind closed doors, out of sight from the cameras, at least 31 people have died in ICE custody in 2025. 31. That, according to Washington State's Democratic Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, whose office receives death reports as the top Democrat on the Subcommittee on Immigration, Integrity, Security, and Enforcement. All of that, as the White House and Homeland Security's Nome continue to defend the behavior of ICE, describing Good's actions as, quote, an act of domestic terror, claiming that she had, quote, weaponized her vehicle and attempted to run a law enforcement official over. A law enforcement official who, at least to my untrained eyes, stepped in front of Good's vehicle and subsequently fired at least 2 shots at her after she had turned her car to the right away from him to avoid him, and after he had clearly stepped aside from the moving vehicle that was moving because ICE cops told her repeatedly to do so, before attempting to open her locked door from the inside of her opened window with her dog in the back seat. So is this how it's supposed to work? Or is this how it now works? Is this, and worse, what we have to look forward to over the next 3 years or more? Or is this, in fact, a turning point now against Trump's already wildly unpopular immigration crackdown? Joining us now is Jim Bierman, formerly the chief of police in Redlands, California. He retired after 33 years of service there. In 2019, he founded the Future Policing Institute, an organization focused on helping prepare policing for an increasingly uncertain future, but also one in which policing is effective, empathetic, and just. Now, there's an idea. Chief Bierman previously served as president of the National Police Foundation, now the National Policing Institute, and consults for a variety of government, community, and private organizations. Oh, Jim Bierman, thank you for joining us today, sir, on the broadcast.
Brad, it's a pleasure to be here. I wish it was under better circumstances.
As do I, sir. Those are hard to come by these days, I'm sad to say. There's you know, so much senselessness and madness to try and make sense of in this story, frankly. I'm not even sure where to start. But let me start with your sort of general reaction to what you, like all of us, has now seen in Minneapolis with the fatal shooting of Ms. Good by the ICE officer Ross. And then we'll dig down into some specifics. Because I got a lot of questions for you here amid what appears to be just the latest such tragedy that we have seen since Trump's supposed immigration crackdown began last year.
Well, you know, I probably got as many questions as you do, and I don't know how many answers I have. But yeah. One thing I'd like to do right out of the gate and make sure that we're really clear about this. In our national lexicon around policing and crime and disorder, we refer, and this is the term that I use and I've used since the late 70s when I started in policing, we use the term cops to signify local police officers, highway patrol officers, or sheriff's deputies. And I would like to make a very clear distinction between the ICE agents and municipal police officers that I would call cops. Mm-hmm. I personally do not refer to the ICE agents as cops. They are enforcing the law, so they are law enforcement agents, they are law enforcers, but they're not police officers. And there is a huge distinction between policing in this country and law enforcement, even though we commingle those terms a lot, and I think it can be a bit confusing for people, but there is a huge difference between the expectations of police chiefs and sheriffs across this country about the behavior of their officers, their cops, and what appears to be the policies, practices, organizational culture of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents. Mm-hmm. So I guess I first want to just be clear, in at least in my view and those of, I think, probably all of the fellows of the Future Policing Institute, that are almost all of them are somehow affiliated with policing and have collectively thousands of years of experience in American policing, that we see this very differently, and it's very problematic. It causes us, I think, a lot of angst when, understandably, people confuse these terms and these ideas. I think we need to set ICE aside and think about their behaviors and their practices and policies in one way, and think about municipal policing that for now decades has been attempting to engage in what we refer to as community policing kind of practices, and operate in many cases seemingly under a very different set of rules, especially if you're in a state like California that has very different rules around training and use of force than apparently does ICE agents. I don't know. I hope that makes sense to you, but I'm going to try to make that distinction.
It does make sense, and I do understand why you would want to make that distinction. I understand, frankly, why no one would really want to be associated with what those folks are doing, but they are doing policing activity in metropolitan areas, pulling people over, asking for their ID, asking for their proof of citizenship. I mean, they are doing police work, whether we would want to describe them as such or not. They're doing that work. They've been hired now by the thousands with a budget that is larger than many of the militaries around the country. So I think that if anything, they should be held to a higher standard than that which we might hold our local cops up to. No.
Well, you know, I think we would all hope that, right?
Yeah.
As you know, the challenge in thinking about policing in the United States is that there really is not what is referred to as a national coherence around policing, right? Mm-hmm. We have 50 different states, and it is really at the state level that local state, county cops are regulated. So mm-hmm. in my state, the state of California, is pretty typical in terms of this thing called the Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training, sets the rules, if you will, mm-hmm. the training standards, and through that, really cultural attributes of policing in California. And then the state legislature has weighed in on certain laws that it's passed around. The standards, for instance, in which police officers in California can use deadly force. It's a different standard than what the feds are following. But you would like to think that because we have these 50 different models of policing in the United States that run the gamut from very sophisticated, like California, and not so sophisticated in some places, mm-hmm. that you'd like to think that the feds are, it's like how we used to think about the FBI, right, are a cut above everybody else, mm-hmm. that they are being held to a different standard. They're mm-hmm. qualitatively better in their recruiting and their training and their hiring and all of that. I don't think that's the case. And it's just a real challenge for police chiefs and sheriffs in this country. In those places, there yeah. are some exceptions to this that did not ask them to come in.
Right.
They're not looking for them to. Well, this is a little different with the National Guard or other federal law enforcement, but the ICE agents are purporting or allegedly carrying out the enforcement of immigration laws. Mm-hmm. They're not enforcing traffic laws. They're not responding to burglaries or graffiti or mm-hmm. going to a domestic violence kind of a situation. They are mm-hmm. supposed to be focusing on the enforcement of immigration laws. The process and the tactics that they are using are similar to policing tactics, but they are clearly following, it would seem to me, because this keeps happening, a different set of training protocols than what you would see from local police officers. Mm-hmm. If you watch, for instance, how I'm in the LA metropolitan area, but right. anywhere in California, this is true. LA has lots of vehicular pursuits, and the way they approach cars that they believe to be high risk is profoundly different than the way you see these ICE agents approaching cars. And there is a reason for that, because it is safer for the public the way right. the California cops do it. It is safer for the officers and the people in the car. And some of the tactics that the ICE agents have been using, as documented by video, it's not just one, it's multiple videos showing mm-hmm. them doing these things,
yeah.
really makes me wonder about their training and the organizational culture.
It seems to me that if anything, I know that, you know, when the feds come in to any particular, you know, to a crime scene or some particular effort, that state and local officials tend to follow the lead of the feds at a certain point when the feds take over the investigation or whatever it is. But here, I mean, it seems to me that the feds ought to be following the leads of the local officials who understand how to make a simple a traffic stop. I mean, no matter how you categorize this, it is policing, no matter who is doing it. It's unclear, for example, we haven't seen all of the video, of course, from before the incident in Minneapolis, before the two officials, ICE officials, got out of their pickup truck, they approached Renee Good's car, who may have been blocking traffic on the street. We don't know. But from what we have seen, from a policing perspective, and I think this applies whether it's local cops or federal cops, what would have been the appropriate response, at least, from this fella, Ross, who did the shooting, to whatever was going on? He, after all, appeared to step in front of her vehicle. Is that normal, correct policing procedure in such an incident, whether you're feds or local?
Right. So these are bad tactics. Now, the videos that I have seen mm-hmm. start at really the point where the shooting officer gets out of his vehicle and is talking to Renee Good's wife. Mm-hmm. I don't know what was going on prior to all of that.
Right.
But if you just, so you have to kind of keep that in mind, right? Because there are so many things about this incident that we don't really know. They probably know, the FBI who's been investigating this, I'm sure knows this at this point. But just based on what we've seen, there are so many aspects of this that we don't know. But just, I've watched these videos multiple times. And this is an officer that 6 months earlier was apparently involved in another incident like this, where he was dragged for about 100 yards and mm-hmm. almost died, mm-hmm. Where he approached a car. So you would think that he might be hypersensitive to being around cars and being more
right
careful about what he's doing. And there's probably even a question as to whether he was traumatized by that. And there's so much, right, to be unpacked around that incident and how it impacted his behavior here. But what you can see and what everybody sees is he's talking to her wife. I think he is clearly distracted because he's paying more attention to her. I think he's trying to film the car for some reason, maybe later on for investigative reasons. As he's walking around it, then he when he's on the passenger side, he's interacting with her wife. And then he continues to move around to the front. And all of those, the minute he hears the driver of the ICE pickup truck that pulls up where that guy is trying to get her out of the car, he's mm-hmm. ordering her to get out of the car, and he's yanking on the door, and it's mm-hmm. stuck. At some point, he has to either decide he is going to focus on her wife or he's going to pay attention to what's going on the other side of the car. And my guess is that he is really distracted, because the worst place you want to be in an enforcement action is in front of a running car with a driver behind the wheel.
Of course.
Just from your own safety,
of
right?
Of course.
In common sense, right? This is not difficult to understand.
I don't even need to be a police, right, state or federal to understand that.
There might be circumstances where that would be justified. There might be circumstances where an officer might fire and be justified in doing that. We don't know enough about this, but watching the videos, it looks like he precipitates the jeopardy that he is now in.
Yeah.
But their rules, their rules and the broad case law that is going to probably govern whether his actions were found to be reasonable or not under a U.S. Supreme Court case called Graham versus Connor mm-hmm. and the subsequent cases to that mm-hmm. are different than they would be in other places like California, which has a necessity that the use of deadly force has to be deemed necessary in the defense of human life. So it's a slightly different but substantive difference, and that may exist in Minnesota too, but the state and local authorities are not investigating this. The FBI is.
Well, right. And I want to talk about that too. From what we have seen, Chief Bierman, is there enough information? And of course, remember, Kristi Noem originally made her remarks within an hour or two afterwards. Donald Trump claimed that she had run over the man, that he was, you know, barely surviving in the hospital or whatever it is. But now here we are almost a week later. Is there enough information even now to suggest that this woman was committing an act of domestic terrorism? Because that is how this has been painted by the federal officials who have the biggest microphone, and that essentially she was to blame for what happened here because of her actions, because of her violent domestic terrorism. Is there any reason to believe, based on what we have seen, and certainly based on what they would have seen, Noem and Trump and so forth, an hour or two afterwards, that this was a domestic terrorist incident that mandated 3 shots to the face at point-blank range?
So I have not seen anything, certainly, that would tell me that this woman was a domestic terrorist. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist,
okay.
I suppose, right? Because they've not released a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that one could create a narrative under which that label might be appropriate for her. When you watch the videos and what little I think everybody kind of understands about the context. I think it's hard for people, it's certainly hard for me, to label her as a domestic terrorist. Mm-hmm. She is appears to be a woman exercising her First Amendment right. She may be participating in a bit of civil disobedience. Mm-hmm. And when the officer or the agent that's driving the ICE pickup truck comes up to her car screaming and yelling at her, he's swearing at her, and he's obviously upset. His partner officer, the guy that gets out of the passenger side, is very calm mm-hmm. and is not exhibiting that behavior. My guess is that she panicked and she was afraid of him. And because when you look at the video of the shooting officer, her wife is actually trying to get in the car, mm-hmm. but the door's locked. Mm-hmm. And you would think that if she was trying to escape with her co-conspirator wife, then she might wait and unlock the door so she can get in. But I think she probably panicked. She may not have even seen the guy in front of her because she's focused on the guy who's screaming and yelling at her and threatening to pull her through the window.
Well, that's another issue, Chief.
And she took off, right? And it hit him.
And it seems like Jonathan Ross himself panicked in firing those shots. But that's another issue itself, and that we heard a little bit from the Philadelphia sheriff speaking to Sheriff Belial during the introduction. Ms. Good was in her car. These two fellows pulled up in a pickup truck, not marked as an official vehicle, just a civilian pickup truck. They get out of their truck with masks on, with body armor on, and they come and reach into her window to open that door. Jim, that seems like it would be terrifying, really, on any level. Do we even know that these guys are cops? Are federal officials at that point, right? Are ICE agents? Do we even know? Doesn't it fall upon the federal officials to be the responsible ones in a case like that? And I'm curious your thoughts on Sheriff Belial, who says police officials do not, law enforcement officials do not show up with masks on. That's not so, what we do.
Yeah. So I guess let me address your first point.
Yeah.
So there's a notion in policing called police legitimacy, right? And it really goes back to the early days of policing mm-hmm. under this guy named Sir Robert Peel in the 1800s in England. And the Peelian principles really underpin the democratic policing model of policing in the United States. Part of that is how the public views the behavior of the police or law enforcement people as being legitimate or not. Mm-hmm. And when they behave like this, right? So you can envision, I think rather easily, ICE agents doing their job in a respectful, less assertive, less violent manner, without screaming and yelling and swearing at people and threatening to do all kinds of stuff, and still do what they need to do. So there's in that mm-hmm. footage, there's the two guys in the pickup truck.
Yep.
One's calm, the driver's not. What if the calm agent had walked up to her and said, "Ma'am, understand you're pissed off at us, but mm-hmm. we really need you to get out of the way, and you can't obstruct us. We don't want to take you to jail," you know, very calm. She probably wouldn't have taken off.
Right.
Because when you watch the first part of the shooting officer's video, when he walks by her window.
Yeah.
And she looks up, she says, "Hey, I'm not mad at you guys."
Right.
You know, I mean, she's very calm.
Yeah.
That certainly doesn't appear in that moment to be the behavior of a domestic terrorist.
Yeah.
There may be things that they discover later on. I just want to say, because we don't know, later on, maybe they're going to find some writings or some things that would indicate she has a different leaning. But so at this point, what they've released and the way we as the public in a democracy are consuming these images we see, it's very difficult to watch that and not think that a much better, safer, less deadly outcome was achievable without much effort.
Which is why it drives me nuts, Jim, to hear these people, these folks, blaming Renee Good. Now, they may find information, like you said, writing that yeah. she's a radical, leftist, violent domestic terrorist. But short of that, What they're doing right now is they're going out and putting the blame on this woman. And right now, all of the evidence does not put the blame on that woman. The evidence seems to put the blame on the cops and the way they acted, the law enforcement officials, the ICE agents, the way they acted, the threat that they posed to this woman. And I am wondering, as a retired cop yourself, still in policing with the Future Policing Organization Institute, don't we need to stand up at this point against that kind of behavior from these officials? There's some $75 billion has now been appropriated specifically for ICE to hire thousands and thousands of these new enforcement officers that are going to be on the streets, Jim. As you said, acting as that guy did and those cops did in Minneapolis, and as so many other incidents that we have seen around the country, don't we need to speak up loudly and clearly against that right now?
Well, we certainly need to speak up loudly about the behavior that we're seeing. Now, how that's going to impact this administration and the people they hire, how they're trained, the messaging inside the organization, what these guys and gals are being told to do, and how they're, what level, or what kind of behavior is acceptable, I think is really, I'm searching for the right word because it's certainly problematic, but I think it can be alarming at time. I gotta believe that probably the majority of the people that were working for ICE were trying to do the right thing when they took that job. It has changed in the last, in recent history.
Mm-hmm.
This is a different organization than it was. DHS is a different place than it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I think, in our democracy, we have to speak out when we see injustices. And we have a whole history. I mean, our country is predicated on, opposing totalitarian kind of behaviors. And we protest a lot, and we should be. We have a thing called the First Amendment that protects our ability to protest, right? We should protest.
Yeah.
We should say, but we need to do that nonviolently, which fortunately seems to be happening now around this. And people should express their outrage.
Well, as far as I can tell, Ms. Good was quite nonviolent. And to have her, characterized by the President of the United States as a radical leftist terrorist who, ran over a cop, none of that happened. And I feel like we all need to speak out collectively against what happened, collectively, loudly, clearly, particularly when, you reference the investigation, the FBI investigation. Well, they have kept the state out of that investigation, or at least they are trying to. The state is, considering state murder charges, which are not pardonable at the federal level, but the FBI has told them, nope, you're not welcome to this information, this interview, the crime scene, the evidence, and everything else. That is even more troubling to me, mandating even, I'm sorry to say, but louder outrage from all of us before this heads where it is clearly heading.
So this is where, we like to think of policing, I think, in this country as being immune from politics and political influence.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, that's not the case in many instances, and this is one of those, because you have an administration that has one perspective on this in a state where the governor ran against the president.
Mm-hmm.
And so right there, you're going to get these opposing viewpoints, very different paradigms about how things should be done, very different perspectives. This could not have happened in probably a more difficult place. For all kinds of reasons. And
all due respect, Jim, we've had presidents and governors who have been of different parties. They work together in general in cases like this, in times of crisis, national crisis. They come together.
Sure.
This is the
one would hope
of that
they could set their differences aside. But my guess is that the ICE agent and his colleagues are convinced that if the Minnesota authorities are involved, they're going to file on him. And the Minnesota authorities are convinced if they don't participate in the investigation, that he's going to be cleared.
Yeah.
And my guess is that is probably going to happen. And it's going to be without the evidence that the prosecutors would need that comes out of the investigation. It will be, I think, very difficult for the Minnesota authorities to charge this guy with a criminal crime, because you, in this country, you have to have evidence, right, to convict somebody.
Very quickly.
If you don't have the evidence, you can't file the charges, and you're not going to court on them.
Jim, I've got to get to a break here. I'm really sorry, but very quickly, if you can sort of just give me a yes, no with your thoughts on this. Should there be a joint investigation with the FBI and the state so that we have full transparency, have those competing sides politically, if you will, in that investigation so that we can all know if he is cleared of charges, that he should be cleared of charges? That question, should they all be investigating cooperatively there, and be the other part about the Sheriff Belial in Philadelphia? I'm afraid I cut you off previously. Should these agents, any law enforcement agents, be operating like this with masks on, without, badges, badge numbers, and civilian cars and so forth?
Well, to your first question, I would say yes. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that the Minnesota investigators and the FBI working together, they probably have a good professional relationship, would work well together and come up with an answer to all of this. So they absolutely should. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. And I don't know anybody that so far that I've talked to that disagrees with it.
Right.
Your other question has to do with whether they should be wearing masks. That's a bit more complicated. I think it's very uncomfortable for anybody who's served in local policing to watch that. But on the other hand, they claim that they have been doxxed repeatedly. And at some point, agencies have to take steps to protect their employees. I don't know if the doxing has occurred at the level that they claim. I don't know if there's another way to get around all of that. But it is not the kind of behavior that you see police officers. Again, this is a way to distinguish cops versus federal ICE people.
Fair enough. But as a cop, you also faced, potential doxing when you're out there doing what you need to do. It's not always popular. But hopefully it's something that keeps you and your cops on their better behavior, because they know that everybody can see who they are and they are not hiding behind those masks.
Right. And you have to have your nameplate and you have to have a badge number.
Right.
There's all these identifiers.
Yeah.
Right. In a democratic policing environment. We are not. That is not. I will say it again. I understand the points you made, Brad, earlier, and I get that. I totally understand it. But I will make it this point probably as long as I can. That's another distinguishing factor between cops and these federal ICE agents.
Mm-hmm.
Cops don't do that. ICE agents do.
Well, ICE agents shouldn't. ICE agents should learn something from the cops on that particular matter.
I couldn't agree more with that.
All right. Well, I got to get out. I got to let you go. Jim, really enjoyed speaking with you. Hopefully we can come back again and slug things out in various ways here in the future. Jim Bierman is the president of the Future Policing Institute and the Center on Policing and Artificial Intelligence. He's the formerly the police chief of police in Redlands, California. Jim Bierman, really appreciate speaking with you today. Folks can check out your work over at futurepolicing.org. Thank you for joining us to try to make sense of this maddening and senseless situation, sir.
You're welcome, Brad. I hope to talk to you again.
Very good. Thank you. All right. We got to get to a break here. I know we got some folks calling in. Good. Roger in Minneapolis will give us an update on how he's doing, how they're doing, how those protests are now growing, not just in the Minneapolis and the Twin Cities, but around the state. And yes, around the country. And I would love all of your thoughts on this. What did you see in Minneapolis? And moving forward at this point, what would you like to see? The calls to abolish ICE entirely are now growing. Can that system be reformed, or is it time to return to a pre-9/11 way of dealing with immigration issues? You know, ICE didn't exist just about 20 short years ago. It used to have the Immigration Naturalization Service and the DOJ, and Customs and Border Protection were at the border, not in the middle of major U.S. cities. Our phone number is 818-985-5735. That is 818-985-KPFK. I'd love to hear from you. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and The Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
And all this false narrative that they're pushing, it's just going to double down on hate against ICE. For instance, calling it a murder, the mayor calling it a murder. The hateful rhetoric has caused a lot of this violence. I said way back in March, if the hateful rhetoric doesn't decrease, there will be bloodshed. Unfortunately, I was right. And it's not over. There will be more bloodshed unless we decrease the hateful rhetoric.
Yeah, do stop. Take them out. Thank you. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. So it's the hateful rhetoric. It's the hateful rhetoric about ICE that has caused the bloodshed. That, according to Tom Holman, who you heard just now, the, what is he, the czar, Desi Doyen, of immigration?
Yes, I believe he is the border security czar.
I didn't even get to say hi to you. I jumped right into it, Desi Doyen.
That
hi, how are you?
Quite all right. Okay. Hi. I just wanted, you know, after listening to all of this, yeah. I think you made something of this point that the Trump administration is basically saying that the burden is on citizens
yeah.
who have to behave perfectly,
right.
but law enforcement officers do not, and they can act as recklessly as they want, and they can even shoot you in the streets. But,
apparently,
yeah,
right in the face.
It's kind
That's
of insane.
Which is kind of the point that I was trying to get to there with Jim Bierman, and thanks again to Jim for joining us and giving us that perspective from a law enforcement perspective. But I got to tell you, you know, when I see these folks, these top administration officials coming out and blaming the woman, and you hear Tom Holman saying, you know, blaming the rhetoric for what happened. We just can't help ourselves. You're using rhetoric, so you're going to get shot in the face. You know, sure, there may be more information out there. We may learn more about this. No doubt we will. But, you know, I think that we all collectively can see where this is going and that we all collectively need to speak out loudly and clearly to, frankly, stop what ICE is doing, where ICE is going, what the federal officials are doing, how they're cutting out the local law enforcement officials, cutting out the local and state investigations. In Minnesota, we have got to speak up loudly and clearly about that. If we don't, there will be more bloodshed as I see it.
I think you are correct. I also think we can see a pattern of escalation from the Trump administration spreading out throughout the ICE agents and CP and the Border Patrol agents and federal agents that, you know, protest now. Free speech, protected protest is now a reason for you to be attacked by police. If you say mean things, well, you should know better now. And I think that that's absolutely false and a very dangerous path that they are putting
And
us
I
on.
Think that's the message that they
yes.
are trying to send. 818-985-5735. That went a little bit longer than I had planned, but let's see if we can get to Roger in Minneapolis, our friend Roger. Hey, Roger, how are you, sir? How are you doing out there? How are you guys doing out there overall? How's Minneapolis doing? Good to hear you. Thanks for calling into the broadcast, sir.
Well, thank you, Brad and Desi. I'm really honored to get to be part of this program today. I can't help but first voice Very briefly, and I really want to move on to the meat of what I have to say.
Okay.
I felt that your guest sidestepped and hedged with the best of them, and I resented his suggestion that there might be any factors, even if she had written a lengthy pro-overthrow violent manifesto, that does not matter. The behavior of the enforcement people in this case was unacceptable, period. And I thought it was embarrassing to hear any hedging on that on the part of your guest. Shame on him, in my opinion.
Okay.
But moving right along, I live in Minneapolis. I saw the militarized response to the George Floyd situation in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening now comes as no surprise to me whatsoever. We now have a full-blown Gestapo force unleashed in this country. I myself am very frightened by these developments. In terms of, okay, I have not felt safe to participate in protests on the street for many years. I have suffered violence at the hands of people vested with the right to wield violence, whether they were justified or not. I've experienced that a couple of times in my life. I understand the arbitrary nature of these things. And I myself, with my powerful use of words, make myself a target to people who don't have that as their first choice. So I am intimidated off of the streets by the kind of police tactics that we are witnessing now.
And let me just say something.
That is a simple fact.
Let me say something in response to that, Roger, because I think that I'm very sorry to hear that, because that is, if anything, you know, they call it the First Amendment. It's, you know, the idea that your speech itself, unless you are, you know, calling for immediate violence, that your speech itself is free in this country, and that you feel intimidated and that you feel even chilled to participate because you fear you might say something. Well, that is understandable, and I would suggest tragic. That's what Tom Holman, was going for, saying, well, it's the rhetoric. It's the rhetoric that is going to cause bloodshed. No, the rhetoric does not cause bloodshed. The people who cause violence cause bloodshed. The people who pull out their gun and shoot you in the face, they are to blame for what happened in your town there, Roger.
I absolutely agree with you, and it is tragic, but I have tremendous gifts of love and wisdom and beauty to offer this world. And I am a person who is going to find other means to express myself. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not very important. It is extremely important that we have people power, that as many people as possible get out in the streets and show their opposition to this. I'm extremely proud of my state and my city. I am very proud of us, and ever more so. I urge people to show their objection to this rise of fascism in our country in every meaningful and constructive way they possibly can. I am optimistic. I do believe we see here the seeds of the undoing of this entire thing.
And Roger, let me just stop you on that point, only because I'm up against the clock here. Let me stop you on that optimistic note, for what it's worth. We will take it.
Yes.
Hang in there, Roger. Stay in touch, my friend. Stay safe out there in Minneapolis. I do think the good guys are going to eventually win this one, if only because they got you on their side. Thanks for checking in, Roger. I appreciate it, my
friend. Thank you, guys.
Happy New Year, brother. Let me see if I can get in one more quick call before I got to go here. We are up against the hour. My apologies for that. Ken in Long Beach. Hey, Ken, welcome to the broadcast. Very quickly, what is on your mind here, sir?
Well, I knew this was going to happen. The minute that they declared the Department of Homeland Security under Hitler, the SS was the Department of Homeland Security. It started out the same way.
I got you, Ken. Yeah, it did start the same way. The first thing they did was the secret police. And, you know, and the first thing they did was they started rounding up the so-called criminal illegal aliens. At the time, those were Jews from other European nations and so forth, and they played the very same playbook. I'm not comparing right now Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. I am comparing the actions that he has taken since becoming president to much of what we did see when Hitler came to power. And if you ignore that point, you are ignoring history. And if you ignore history, you are doomed to repeat it. I say let's not repeat it. My thanks to the callers. My apologies to those who I could not get to today. And my thanks to, once again, to my guest, former Redlands, California Police Chief Jim Bierman of the Future Policing Institute at futurepolicing.org. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always greatly appreciated. It's always greatly an honor. No matter how mad all of this becomes, perhaps despite how mad all of this becomes, it's more of an honor each and every time. Thank you very much for all of that. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other we've ever done since the beginning of time, you can download them all for free at bradblog.com, where you can share them with those you know, love, and or hate. That's bradblog.com. You can also drop me an email on bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.